Immortal technique in the trenches with my nigga Akir. A family survived the genocide so we could be here. And now we enterprise the aftermath, one in the same. Living the revolution till we catch one in the brain. And even then my spirit will return in heavenly form and wipe the chessboard clean of my enemy's pawns. The Red Dawn, communist threat, buried and gone. So they invented a war the government could carry on. It makes me wonder if the word of God is lost in a man. This is for the children of Iraq, lost in the sand. This is for the illest MCs that'll never be known. And this is for all the soldiers that'll never come home. I wrote this for Mumia, stuck in the beast. For people who march in the streets and struggle for peace. For hood niggas born rugged, never rocking Versace. Eddie Ramirez, cousin George, and my old friend Sashi. Chris from the block, and all my niggas stuck in a cell. Paul Wolfowitz, motherfucker, I'll see you in hell. My destiny's to show the world that the music is real. Go back in time and play this shit for the slaves in the field. And for my children in the future that are waiting to breathe. People slowly dying, hanging on, waiting to leave. Believe when I'm gone and this album's on a library shelf. I'll be one with God and one with you and everything else.
One love, one music, one people, one movement, one heart, one spark, one.
Hi, this is Christina Tobin, and thanks for joining the Free and Equal Network today. We've got an amazing American rapper. He's also an urban activist born in Peru. His name is Immortal Technique. He lives in Harlem, New York. Welcome to our show today, Immortal.
Thank you very much, Christina.
Yep, you're in New York, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm in New York right now.
Oh, man, the timing. But I just... not even sure where I'm going to start with this interview today. Immortal, I've been telling you a bit, you know, in the last couple months or so, and it was really awesome to meet you a couple weeks, I think, ago or so at the House of Blues. You were here in L.A., and and we had all of our supporters, you know, from our talent through Free and Equal and United We Stand, and I want to thank you so much for having us there. It was really great to meet you face-to-face. I think that's always so important, even though it was a bit brief, but it was really a magical moment, it felt like.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I definitely wanted to let our supporters know. Many of them are familiar with you, but many of them may not yet be familiar with what you've done with your life and your background being so pure and real and raw. Genuine, and I would love for our listeners that just maybe don't know enough about Immortal Felipe, you know, yourself, to let them know a little bit of your background, where you're from, and what it is you do for a living and how that came about.
Well, those people that haven't heard my music, I just invite them to burn whatever they can off the internet. You can go ahead and steal it. And if you enjoy listening to it, then you're more than welcome to support me and buy something off FIFOrecords.com. I mean, I could go into a long soliloquy about where I wanted to be in life when I was, like, in my teenage years and juxtapose that with where I am now. But I think things turned out okay, you know, and I think it's a testament to those situations that people have a plan in life and it doesn't turn out exactly the way you wanted it to, and yet you're still helping people. You still achieved a lot of things. You know, I got to tour the world. I did all the music that I did independently. I didn't go begging big labels for money. I'm one of those original do-it-yourself guys in hip-hop, but at the same time, I tell people that that comes with a price. And while you can also have a certain amount of monetary success that's higher than you would with a big label, I think that there's the imagery of what success is that I think people don't understand. You can be poor and not that successful and have the image of being a very rich person. That's a staple almost in music. But I think that at the end of the day, what people forget that makes them wealthy are the things in their life besides money. You know, like love, for example, is one of the most important things in a human being's life. And yet that seems to be not first on a lot of people's lists when they talk about success. So I think the music that I make paints a clear picture of, you know, the trials and tribulations that people go through from various walks of life. And what success might mean to them is maybe turning a faucet on and having water running. So we're going to do the free and equal festival. Some people's ideas of success is just to be free and equal. You know, it's not to own a yacht. It's not to be able to fly to Paris and vacation there for the weekend. You know, it's just to be able to support their family and not have to buy stuff with food stamps or not be forced to buy genetically modified goods because they can't afford organic stuff. You know, maybe that's somebody's idea. So I guess I just rap from a reality hip-hop perspective.
You know, when I went to your show at House of Blues, the first concert I ever saw when I was young, you know, in high school, of all, it wasn't even in the music industry, was I've seen Common, you know, of all different artists, but maybe Michael Jackson before that when I was a kid. So those were the first Michael Jackson ones. And so just kind of being around music and all, but, and I've been to a lot of concerts, such a variety of genres of music, but when I saw you at House of Blues, I have never seen anything like what I witnessed from, you know, above the stage on the side, and I saw the kids resonating with your lyrics. I mean, I saw the masses, like right there was this trigger of the masses being awakened through the power of music, and again the rawness of what you stand for, not compromising in your lyrics and speaking and expressing what it is you feel, what's going on in the world, and you know, whether it's through, you know, Egypt and Russia and Ukraine and Afghanistan and Israel and Syria. I mean, it's just, your lyrics are so, they're honest. And the kids and the people, that really sets you apart from the rest, not only because of that, but because of Viper Records. You guys go to ViperRecords.com. It's awesome. Independent label. Like, I'm able to bring you on board with what we're doing in our movement. We'll talk about that later in the interview. Through you, like, you pick up the phone, you make your own decisions. And I feel, whether you're an artist in the music industry or you're a political figure, a political figure that should be elected because you have a conscience, not because you want to have power, you have a, you know, you have the ability to connect with the individuals. And looking at your background and Wikipedia page, it looks like you've done some stuff with Mos Def. Man, that's awesome. He's come, how he came out against Guantanamo Bay. I saw the video on that. Chuck D, Public Enemy. KRS-One, Dead Prez, you know, I just interviewed AA Likes, which is, they're really close with Dead Prez. They went to college together down in Florida. And, you know, of all the different genres of music, what Free and Equal, I've just found like there's just this realness with hip hop. So I'd love for you to speak a little bit more about your relationships maybe with other artists and how that's influenced you, how you've influenced them, and some of the records that you've already released. I mean, the names of these are just, I mean, from the Revolutionary Volume 2 to the Third World. I mean, those are some pretty powerful names for records. I'd just love to hear a little bit more about that and how this all came about.
Right. Well, in terms of producing music, I tell people it's a lot easier to do when you're underground and you're just making a mixtape and you don't have to worry about clearances and stuff like that. But once you get into the realm of actually selling music, then it becomes a whole other story. See, you know what? And part of that will be detailed in the middle passage, the new upcoming album that I have. But I think that over the years, there have been a significant amount of people that are, I guess, elders in hip-hop. Like, we look at an individual like a KRS-One or a Chuck D or an Ice-T, or people that you mentioned. But they've always been incredibly supportive of my career, and they've always been people that have been forthcoming and willing to express, you know, personal failures and personal successes. People like Q-Tip, Ali Shaheed Muhammad from Tribe Called Quest, also two individuals that, you know, were very, very candid in their experiences and in the advice that they gave. I've always been very grateful for anybody in hip hop that has had the opportunity to, that I've had the opportunity to make contact with and learn from. You know, I think it's not just one way or another. I'm sure that there are things that I do to inspire certain individuals, but definitely it's a blessing to be able to have that wisdom in your life, and to have people that have been through the situation that you're going through, and I think and will advise you correctly. You say, you know what, man, like, yeah, this may be the golden era for music, but, you know, it wasn't the golden era for us monetarily. We weren't getting paid like that in the 80s and 90s, the early 90s.
I think something a lot of our listeners don't know, I found that a lot of the individuals being a part of our platform and the movement here at Free and Equal and bringing everyone together, is that I found that a lot of artists, and, you know, whether it's Michael Franti, you, Immortal, tend to do projects on the side that make a positive difference in the world. And something that really stuck out, and I haven't ever spoken to you directly about it, is the amazing work you've done in Afghanistan. I have a very soft spot for orphanages and helping children from broken families, as I hope one day to build one in Indonesia and maybe throughout the world. But I resonate with you on that as well. You went to Afghanistan back in 2008, and you've spoken to hospitals, I think, over there as well, and high schools, and reaching out to the kids. But you built an orphanage there. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience there? It's just a beautiful thing that you did. Done.
Thank you. I mean, I can't take any of that credit solely. I mean, the people that approached me for that idea were the people of Omeid International, OMEID.org. And I must say that what made all the difference to me in deciding to be a part of that was the way that, obviously, the subject matter and the reality of those dire circumstances, but also the diligence and the effectiveness and the organization of people that contacted me. It was like, listen, we're not asking for a handout. You know, we have a program. We have a platform ready to go. They were full of all these incredible ideas. And I thought that they were great ideas. And I frankly said to myself, you know, how can I not be a part of this? How can I turn this down? How can I turn these people away who are willing to risk their own lives to go back to their homeland? A place that many of them were forced out of because of this conflict, and or left because of their parents were forced out of that conflict. So, in a sense, you know, it wasn't just that I chose that adventure, or that I chose that task. That task kind of chose me in a way too. I was really, really at a crux, at a turning point in my life, deciding, you know, if this is just music, then it's just music. But if it's something more than that, you know, if it means something else to certain people, if it has the impactful, if it has the power to impact people's lives in a way that's incredibly positive, then it's doing more than just ennobling people from sound. You know, people can be inspired. They can learn things through music. Let me get a dust. And they can have all the reactions to you in the world. However, if you're out there and you're leading by example, and you're saying, okay, well, this is what I'm actively going to be involved in. This is where I'm going to stake my personal credibility as well. You know, because I remind people in the very beginning, there were a lot of skeptics that surrounded that. They were saying to me, I don't know, like, you know, this is a country where lots of people have been taken advantage of, you know, lots of charities are really scam artists. So I had to put some of my money up front first as a personal donation to let people know that I was willing to be the first individual to step in. And I think things like that are necessary when you're dealing with situations where you have to lead by example. And that's definitely one of those situations. It's definitely not something you can just take. People just blow off and just say, okay, well, yeah, if people are willing to care, then I guess this is going to go somewhere. You know, you have to show people that the reason that they should care is not just because it's a good cause. but because it's not a good cause that's being run by corrupt people. There are plenty of times that people see a good cause and they want to help, but it's just the way that it's introduced to them or the people that are running it or some situation that kind of orbits what you're trying to do is keeping you away from it. And I remind people that that's not the only place where you need to go in order to get that sort of work done. You know, you have a variety of options. You actually have limitless amount of options, really, because there are millions of people in the world that need your help.
And that is something that is contagious. It catches on when you do something great. If two people do that, 10, 20, 30, hundreds, thousands, millions, and so on, it's something that, you know, every little bit of good, it all adds up together. And I do foresee a major shift coming here in America of very positive things rising because we have, you know, the power of technology and the internet and people on the ground as well. And I had previously asked you before in our interview, you know, who are your musical influences, you know, how much of an effect do you think they've had on your music today? And you've already answered that. Cody Slane on Facebook actually asked that question. Another gentleman, Will Brown, a lighter question, said, well, when is his next album dropping?
Okay. Well, right now I'm in the middle of the middle passage. I'm like halfway through. I've got a series of songs that I've written, some from a couple of years ago, some that I'm finishing up as we speak. So hopefully we can release this year. I'm definitely trying to get that to that.
Cool. I wanted our activity on Facebook, the listeners there and supporters, to know that they can and will be heard through our interviews and things that we do. And in the future, our interviews will be live. So there'll be more interaction. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. And so, back to the system, you know, the system, the two-party system. I've watched a lot of your interviews online and definitely have a lot in common with you of how, you know, the powers to be, a few elite, you know, control the system. They use tools like the party system or the Commission on Presidential Debates, mainstream media. We see what's happening there with Abby Martin of RT America and Amber Lyon, both friends of mine, speaking at our upcoming United We Stand Fest that you're performing at UCLA. You know, just these tools that a few powerful families are so used to intentionally divide us. And can you tell us a little bit more of how these tools have impacted, you feel, the music industry? We don't have to go into the Illuminati's conspiracy thing. My take on the conspiracy theory is the government itself seems to be, you know, creating these words. It's just no coincidence that under the National Defense Authorization Act, that a definition of a terrorist is the conspiracy theorist. And I think to myself, since when has it been wrong for somebody to express their opinion, whether it's true or not? It's our job as citizens to look it up, you know, and educate ourselves and find out what's real and what isn't. But we should have the right to voice our opinion. And so, you know, on that note, can you tell me a little bit more about the music industry as to why you feel there maybe should be an alternative platform that can bring together artists, not only in the hip hop community, but, you know, country to, you know, all the different types of from across, you know, of all different music together. Tell me a little bit more about your film experiences you had there.
I'll just say this, because you asked like seven questions. I'll try to get through all of them. First is the politics of it all and the two-party system. Look, the problem is that every party has a platform and an agenda. So a lot of people don't even know what their party's platform and agenda really is. The problem is that a lot of times the parties, in response to people wanting the platform to change and the agenda to change, will change the phrasing of the agenda. It will change the phrasing of the party framework, but it won't actually change the fundamental points of the idea, you know? So in their mind, it's not like, oh, well, our ideas are bad, we need to change. No, the way they think is, what we have to do is convince people that we're right about banning abortion across the board, right? Now, that's not going to work, and you're going to get a pushback from the majority of Americans, but their point and position is not, okay, somehow maybe my thinking is flawed, No, their position is, okay, we're just going to keep doing this until somehow we get our way and we disrupt the system. Being that we have a gigantic amount of lobbyists in this country, that complicates the situation as well. But I think in terms of the two-party system, what that metaphor is really there to kind of ennoble mankind with is the idea that two answers to a question, not everything has a yes or no answer, you know? And I think that's where third-party politics come in, where we say, okay, yeah, we agree with certain aspects of what, you know, a Republican or a Democratic platform would be, but all of this other stuff that goes along with this is totally unacceptable. I mean, I have friends in my family that they're conservative, and they agree with a lot of the fiscal policies. But then when you start talking to social conservatism and people telling people who you can marry and who you can fall in love with, and then them saying that dinosaur bones are put in the ground to, like, test, they just get turned off by it, you know? Then again, you have people on the left-wing side of things. They'll say, oh, well, you know, I agree with some of the things that Mr. Obama has done to defend this group or this group of people, but you signed the Monsanto Act. What the hell is wrong with you? Or why are you sending more mercenaries into this country? Or shouldn't we be scaling back our operations? Or when are you going to stand up for all those immigrants that you said you were going to defend instead of deporting more in your first term than George Bush did in his two terms put together? I mean, I think that's the idea, that there can be an alternative solution. Just like independent hip-hop, independent music. You don't have to have, you know, either stuff that's incredibly, you know, soft-hearted and the quintessential caricature of conscious music, which is someone, you know, rapping while wearing a crown of flowers and playing a fucking guitar in a field. No. I mean, if you hear the independent music I do, it's incredibly violent. We talk about all kinds of random topics, whether it's war, rape, murder, you know, corruption, whatever it may be, but it's not gratuitous, you know? In other words, there's a reason to it. There's a rationale behind it. There's a story to tell. It's not just for the sake of doing it the way you'll see in commercial hip-hop videos, you know? Like, someone will say to me, oh, you know, those commercial rappers, they're using Illuminati's imagery. None of these fucking people are Illuminati. Let's be serious. Some assistants of theirs realized that imagery sells, that it would be shocking and provocative, but none of them are trying to overthrow a system. You know, none of them are being, none of them are poised to be Neo from the Matrix. They're sitting there happily collecting a check from an industry that exploits their culture. So it is what it is in that respect. But I caution people, again, you don't have to have a yes or no answer to everything, which is why independent politics is so important. Third party politics is so important. Independent music is so important. And that's why these independent festivals are important, too.
I agree. You know, at the third party angle, you know, Felipe, I've been on the inside of working within the National Libertarian and Green Party this last decade. And I'll write a book about it someday, already in the beginning stages. But I have firsthand seen as the party becomes larger and inevitably becomes infiltrated. So I'm a true believer in movement shifting towards an independent movement. I think that more parties, again, at the state level, Libertarians and Greens, they're pretty awesome. But national, there's such a disconnect even between the third parties at the national level and the state parties. So that's just something to be, you know, aware of. I could tell you more about it off the interview, but
no, I mean, there's definitely that idea that that some people are saying that when you have local politics, you can play to your base all day. When you have when you have a national scene, though, I think people rein in some of their ideas because they don't know if they're going to be accepted. They want to play it safe, you know. Someone will say, hey, this is terrible, or the Fed Reserve is terrible when they're running for Congress. You know what I mean? But when they're now a senator, all of a sudden we see some of these criticisms toned down. Or when we see people that are in a position to be anti-police or anti-government, and then all of a sudden you find yourself in government. And you say, oh, well, this is a necessity in our society. Yes, it's a necessity because you have incredibly poor people that are incredibly rich people, and you need to protect the incredibly rich people from the incredibly poor people. And that's essentially what the police department has become in a lot of places, which is sad. You know, you don't necessarily stop crime. You don't show up with a time machine, you know, like the Minority Report. In essence, the vast majority of the time, you find the evidence in the scene of the crime, and then you go and try and punish the people that are responsible for it. And in reality, what we've discovered with a lot of these crime statistics, and especially the ones about drugs, is that a lot of these people are sick. There's a lot of homeless people with mental diseases that are in prison. There are a lot of people who are addicts of substances. And without that addiction, you wouldn't have been behaving like that. You know, it alters your behavior. That's why they call them drugs, ladies and gentlemen. So I think that without accusing the United States of being a nanny system and literally telling somebody what they can and can't do, there is something to be said about helping people who genuinely need help. And they genuinely have a disease, the same way anybody else has a disease, and the fact that they cannot stop hurting themselves. And I remind people that when you're depressed or when you want to hurt yourself, sometimes your body knows you're killing yourself slowly. You know, you're punishing yourself when you do all those things. I'm sure people out there that are listening to this have a friend who's addicted to drugs in some way, shape, or form. Now, don't you know that your friend's body knows that they're killing themselves slowly? You know, but you can't stop somebody from doing that unless you make them realize how much they're not only hurting themselves, but hurting every single other person around. You know, there's that quintessential line that everyone always says, oh, well, you got to make someone quit for them. They can't quit for their kids, or they can't quit for, yeah, that sounds good. But you know what? If someone doesn't give a fuck about their life, then they're not going to quit for them. They don't want to quit for them because they don't matter to them. When you show someone that they matter to you, when you show someone how much they're loved and how much their absence would leave a hole in your life, that's when they begin to love themselves, and that's when they know and they realize and they become self-aware that they're killing themselves. And this government has turned a complete blind eye to those people. It swept them under the rug. It's also traded in its poorer classes for a monetary caste system in the means of a prison industrial complex. So, I mean, where are we going to go with this? Can we beg one person or another party for answers? Or do we have to come up with the answers ourselves? Are the answers going to cost some of those people in power money? Yes, they are. So did slavery. But it had to be done. Oh, I'm sorry, we abolished slavery and you lost your money. You know what, Chief? Find the smallest violin that has ever been built and play it for me, please.
We're 100% on the same page there, tying in the prison system, the military-industrial complex. Russell Brand, you know, I definitely are really a meager to hopefully part of what we're doing on Newsnet and for people in the circles messaging. But, you know, I see a lot of similarities here. You know, when I'm learning more about the pharmaceutical industry and naturally how much money, you know, gives the party system, our government, and, you know, how so many patents, over 5,000 patents have been crushed, you know, by the government since 1900, technology innovation. There's just so much greed and money and the remedies for these illnesses, like you said, is caring, loving, giving them a reason to live. And everything you say, it's easy to listen to you, Felipe. You're just a beautiful soul. I'm just going to put that out there. Yes, people maybe have been, you know, you're welcome. Maybe people have said, you know, oh, those lyrics are really, wow, they're curse words. But at the heart of who you are, and curse words are curse words, it's to get a message across and for the kids to listen. Right. And you are
gotta shock people into hearing.
Beautiful soul. Yeah, you're a beautiful soul. I see the art of why you do that. Never change for anyone. And, you know, to go back to the party thing, and, you know, at our movement, we have people that are affiliated with third parties, from Rosa Clemente to Cindy Sheehan, you know, to Gary Johnson, libertarian, you know, a variety. We also have some anarchists, you know, Jeff Berwick. I know he actually was like, is Immortal an anarchist? He, you know, I don't like to put labels on people. You seem very independent to me. I always believe that the biggest minority is, you know, the individual. And so I guess you feel yourself as a party, an anarchist, an individual. I don't know. We had that question from Jeff Berwick. He's actually speaking here with us too.
Mm.
You don't know?
Wait, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you. Cut out for a second.
Oh, sure. No worries. Jeff Berwick, you know, he asked, you know, like, is Immortal an anarchist? You know, third party anarchists, are you an individual, an independent? You know, I think
there's something to be said about that. No, no. When I first heard about that, and I listened to it, right? I listened to what people had to say about being an anarchist in the political sense, not just someone who runs around not believing in laws and spray painting laws and stuff like that. It's funny, I came up with an interesting comparison. Let's say, Christina, that, you know, you get married, you have a child, right? And somewhere along the line, while your kid's growing up, God forbid, I'm knocking on wood, someone tries to kill your child, right? They shoot your kid, he miraculously survives, right? He survives, he gets his life on, and then 25 years down the line, you see this person that tried to kill your child, right? And you go after them, and you say, yo, wait a minute, you try to kill my kid, you probably try to kill other people, and I'm going to find you, and you smash them in the head with a fucking crowbar, and you make a citizen's arrest, you're going to jail, and people are going to think you're crazy. They're going to be, oh, man, this person held a grudge for that many years, but the state doesn't live by that code. The state can hold a grudge for however many years it wants. The state can fine you for any other reason, and therefore the state has this sort of this manufactured moral high ground over an individual, you know, and it stopped being about whether laws were moral or not, and it just started being you have to follow things to the letter. So I understand in theory what a lot of anarchists are talking about. I just need to see some of the explanations for how specific things in our society would function under that system. So if there's someone who got a doctorate in this shit, I would love to sit down and discuss it with them. But I'm definitely not someone who's closed-minded to any ideas about different forms of government or forms of system. I mean, one interesting tidbit that I'll just point out, because people have accused me of being this ist and that ist and... this ism and that ism. And I tell people all the time, look, I think it's tough to compartmentalize people automatically just because you want to understand them better. If you want to understand them, stop compartmentalizing people, and you'll end up understanding them a whole lot better. You'll end up saying, wow, this person doesn't fit into exactly what my image is of a person who would be, you know, for immigrants. You know what I mean? For immigrant rights. This person doesn't fit all the caricatures of that individual. Oh, okay, well, technique is against the war. What are all the so-called nuances that are supposed to come with that? Well, damn, this doesn't fit into it. In the same way that revolutionary politics doesn't have that sort of clean, crisp transfer. But, I mean, in terms of the state's effect and what it can get away with doing now to people is just incredible. And I think that bears not only mentioning, but in-depth research as well, which is why, I mean, I'm shun away from anarchy just because it has a name that invokes, you know, complete disorder. I mean, I don't think that's what people are advocating, absolute lawlessness and a fucking free-for-all. But at the same time, you know, you can't help but say, okay, well, let's put our society under the same scrutiny as well. Didn't the capitalist system fail a few years ago? Didn't it completely collapse? And without bailouts and us giving money to these organizations, we wouldn't have the infrastructure that we have in America today. So then isn't capitalism a flawed system? or what happens when a socialist system or a communist system fails in the world. We typically in America will blame the system itself and not the regime. Well, sure, we'll take pot shots at the regime, but it was really the system's fault. However, when a capitalist system fails, like Greece or Spain, and people are stranded economically, people don't blame the regimes anymore. They start blaming the system. Oh, man, these people, they turned to socialism. That's why they failed. Well, this system failed because, again, now we're playing that same two-party system, but you're playing it with capitalism and socialism. There are good things about both of those entities. In some way, shape, or form, they serve man in a way. You know, for people that hate socialism or hate communism, okay, cool, then let's privatize everything. Yeah? But let's say that your house is getting broken into, something about to rape your wife, cops show up. Oh, no, we can't help you. You didn't pay your police bill today. It sounds ridiculous, because it is ridiculous. Not everything in the world can be privatized. Okay, congratulations. You're not a Marxist. Now you're a neoliberalist. Now you're an environmental fascist, and you think you can sell everything. You know, one extreme or the other is inexcusable for the range of ideas and the range of intelligence that human beings have. So we can't just be married to one political ideology or another. You know, we have to show a little diversity in our community.
It's a fantastic answer, you know, and being able to look behind the funding and the influences behind Marxism to Ayn Rand. I mean, the money there is questionable. There's a lot of money that intentionally wants to put labels on everyone and everything to divide us. And so our platform is about letting, though we only have a few, I'm glad we have a few anarchists on our, you know, panel at United We Stand. I think we have more independents now, some third party as well, but it's about allowing and enabling them to come together and voice their opinion and letting the people decide what it is that they feel is best for their future in this world, you know, and so, yeah. So
and,
I think
and also understanding,
and be heard.
And understanding the origination of these ideas.
Yeah,
you know, if you bring in Ayn Rand and you want to discuss that, then, you know, let's have an honest conversation about what some of her ideas were and about the racial implications of some of those ideas. You know, if you want to whitewash the people of the past, then you're going to lose allies that read history. You know, you have to confront these things with an open heart to say, okay, you know what? Yeah, some of these ideas that these people had were incredibly wrong. Some of them made sense. You know, some of these ideas that are written about have a practical application in the time that we have now. Some of them don't. And that's where politics comes in. It's the rationale, it's a reason, it's a compromise, you know? Whereas some people believe that politics is just another extension of war. That war, that politics is just takes over when people run out of bullets or when they need a ceasefire. But ultimate domination is the only goal to politics in some people's minds. And unfortunately, that's the people who are in charge of the political system.
Yeah, it's the kind of people that I feel are just going to be replaced by honest leaders with a conscience. You know, whether it's Marianne Williamson running as an independent, and I think she's going to ignite and inspire many more to run as independents for Congress. And I hope our platform to this educational movement, that we can, really create that platform to give them truly a free and equal chance of winning and listing everyone, whether they're running Democrats, Republicans, third parties. I do see a major shift towards independents running for office. They can no longer hide behind party labels, because I feel that we're going to create a platform and launch a database that will hold everybody accountable for what it is they stand for. When they say what they stand for, you got to stick with it, because, you know, if you have a conscience, then you have consistency. I'm a true believer on that. And back to Ayn Rand, yeah, the Institute, definitely a lot of right-leaning money there, and Marxism. And it's just very questionable as I start learning the money and the finances behind those sort of ideas. And I want to get to the fest, but I just can't resist talking a little bit about Gaza, you know, the Philistine, you know, Palestine. And they got bombed again today, and I know you sing a lot about it. And we've got to put a stop to this. It's very upsetting that these innocent people, their lives are gone, and it's just, you know, it's like this positive rise in this movement. I think that's going to kind of catch everyone off guard in an amazing way. And that So Pure is needed, I feel, more than ever. And I just, were you aware of Gaza there being another
bomb
today?
I think what's really sad about that situation is that we only usually hear the names of one group of people that die and that are affected. You know, people don't even know the names of the children, but they know the names because the news media will drill it into their head of all of the people that have been affected, or and especially the IDF soldiers that have been affected. But those people's stories are left untold. And I think that that's a shame, because then we go by this standard of assuming that every single person who's died in these attacks is guilty of something. Or if they're not guilty, then someone who's connected them must be guilty. In reality, look at the statistics. You know, the U.S. drone strikes that people think are so fucking effective, they're less than, what is it, 2% of the time or some ridiculous number like that? Less than 2% of the time they attack their target. The idea of collateral damage has to be addressed too, because people still see this as an acceptable loss of life. And when it stops being an acceptable loss of life, then I think that that's when our society is really going to change. And people say, all right, the natural capital of this affects our society too much. You know?
Do you think it's when we unite and recognize, like, on the bigger topics that we can really agree that the system's been playing us, you know, the party system, the powers to be dividing us? And, you know, when you look at the NDAA and the NSA and the Patriot Act and just the big issues out there, GMOs, drones, I mean, this goes on and on, war, drug war, these seem to be topics that, for the most part, you know, we the people recognize are not good or we can agree on. And in doing so, when we do unite and recognize that, I've found, Felipe, that, you know, working nationally for Ralph Nader in 2008, I was his national ballot access coordinator. I oversaw over 500,000 signatures or more and successfully getting on the ballot throughout the U.S., which was a task that everybody said was impossible. But, you know, it was, you know, I had a great team of people around me, and we achieved getting him on the ballot. But I found that as we had circulators coming together, libertarian circulators and Ralph Nader circulators, they would, you know, join up and share petitions and offset costs. And I found as they started to discuss, they started realizing they had so much more in common than they did not. And I found that individuals on the left, whether they're Green Party, Ralph Nader, independent left-leaning, recognize that there's a lot of waste in government, and they're okay with government being cut back somewhat. You know, some say back to the origins of the Constitution as high as 80%. I think that's a bit really high. Some say 30, 40, 50, 60%. I don't know. It seems like there's so much waste, and cutting it back and holding our government accountable and then letting people decide locally how they want to spend their dollars seems to be the direction that this movement, you know, free and equal elections will help accomplish. Of course, first and foremost, we have to address election fraud and all the tools they use, like the Electoral College and gerrymandering and the closed source software and, you know, all the fraud there. You know, I see the kids and the people getting very engaged in the voting process. So that being said, it just seems like we can unite on these bigger issues very quickly. And that's why I wanted to thank you so much for being a part of our United We Stand Festival at UCLA, May 10th. You're such a leader. You are so honest. You will not compromise. I think you and I have a lot of those things in common. And this movement, you know, we've been offered huge money now several times from huge corporations to fund this. And it's just as much as we need it, and as much as I've put every dollar I can in selling my own jewelry company out of Bali, Indonesia in April of 2009. I sold it for $250,000 and put $100,000 to $150,000 into kicking off free and equal. And as much as we really do need that to take things to the next level, compromising is not an option. Maybe there was a day in the music industry that, you know, you really need that money to survive, you know, to live, to be comfortable, to build, but you didn't compromise, and you have this independent label that is just, I think, is going to be heard by way more people. It's already been heard, you know, by many, I believe, being a top. So, you know, so I just really welcome you on our platform, to not be censored,
to
speak to the kids what you want to speak of. You know, when I saw Lupe Fiasco knocked off the stage at Obama's inauguration, I'm like, come on our stage, man, because you can say what you want to say, and you're going to be heard through social media throughout the world, through Russia and Middle East, and, you know, everybody that covered our 2012 debates, you know, with Larry King. We are so connected with that international media, and I just thank you so much for taking that chance, and I'm doing everything I can to make it as successful as possible, and it's looking pretty good.
Well,
pretty
I look forward to being there, and I appreciate you guys having me, and if you guys want to catch up with me out there in radio land, TV land, you can hit me up on Facebook at Tech Immortal, or on Twitter at Immortal Tech, and then of course Viper Records. And if you want to see me in person, please come to the Free and Equal Festival. I'll see you guys in May. I love y'all. Immortal Technique. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Immortal. Please stay on the line for us. I just got a few minutes after this as I wrap up the show. And so thank you very much, everyone, for listening to Immortal. This is just a historic interview. I feel so many are going to be hearing this in the future. And check out his work at Viper Records, VIPERRecords.com. If you want to invest $1, $10, $100 into truth, honesty, and purity in the music industry, Immortal Technique is at the top of my list. I personally endorse him, which that's even, I've never endorsed an artist yet, and I'm sure I'll be endorsing more, but I personally endorse him. Yeah, thank you, and everything you stand for. So you've been listening to the Free and Equal Network. I hope you've enjoyed this amazing interview. We'll look forward to having Immortal on down the road over and over again. Peace to all of you, and love to all. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
A new age is upon us, and yet the past refuses to rest in its shallow grave. For those who hide behind the false image of the Son of Man shall stand before God, 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 God. It has begun, the beginning of the end. Yeah. Voice of racism, preaching the gospel is devilish. A fake church called the Prophet Muhammad a terrorist. Forgetting God is not religion, but a spiritual bond. And Jesus is the most quoted prophet in the Quran. They bombed innocent people, trying to murder Saddam. When you gave them those chemical weapons to go to war with Iran. This is the information that they hold back from Peter Jennings. Cause Condoleezza Rice is just a new age Sally Hemings. I break it down with critical language and spiritual anguish. The Judas are hanged. The guilt of betraying Christ, who murdered him, stole his religion, and painted him white. Translated in psychologically tainted philosophy, conservative political right-wing ideology, glued together sloppily, the blasphemy of a nation. Got my back to the wall, cause I'm facing assassination. Guantanamo Bay, federal incarceration. How could this be? The land of the free, home of the brave, indigenous Holocaust, and the home of the slaves. Corporate America, dancing offbeat to the rhythm. You really think this country never sponsored terrorism? Human rights violations, we continue the saga. El Salvador and the Contras and Nicaragua. And on top of that, you still wanna take me to prison. Just cause I won't trade humanity for patriotism. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking, causing your perspective to change. They wanna rearrange the whole point of view of the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government wants us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Read about the history of the place that we live in, and stop letting corporate news tell lies to your children. Flow like the blood of Abraham through the Jews and the Arabs, broken apart like a woman's heart, abused in a marriage, the brink of holy war, bottled up like a miscarriage. Embedded correspondents don't tell the source of the tension, and they refuse to even mention European intervention or the massacres in Jenin. The innocent screams, US manufactured missiles and M16s, weapon contracts and corrupted American dreams. Media censorship blocking out the video screens. A continent of oil kingdoms bought for a bargain. Democracy is just a word when the people are starving. The average citizen made to be blind to the reason. A desert full of genocide where the bodies are freezing, and the world doesn't believe that you're fighting for freedom, cause you fucked the Middle East and gave birth to a demon. It's open season with the CIA bugging my crib, trapped in a ghetto region like a Palestinian kid, where nobody gives a fuck whether you die or you live. I'm trying to give the truth and I know the price is my life, but when I'm gone they'll sing a song about immortal technique. Who beheaded the president and the princes and sheiks? You don't give a fuck about us. I can see through your facade like a fallen angel standing in the presence of God. Bitch nigga scared of the truth when it looks at you hard. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain, suggestive thinking causing your perspective to change. They wanna rearrange the whole point of view in the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government want us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Martial law is coming soon to the hood to kill yo, while you hanging your flag out your project window. Yeah. The fourth branch of the government, aka the media, seems to now have a retirement plan for ex-military officials, as if their opinion was at all unbiased. A machine shouldn't speak for men, so shut the fuck up, you mindless drone. And you know it's serious when these same media outfits are spending millions of dollars on a PR campaign to try to convince you they're fair and balanced, when they're some of the most ignorant and racist people giving that type of mentality a safe haven. We act like we share in the spoils of war that they do. We die in wars. We don't get the contracts to make money off them afterwards. We don't get weapons contracts, nigga. We don't get cheap labor for our companies, nigga. We are cheap labor, nigga. Turn off the news and read, nigga. Read.